After a few days of working in the forest, we decided to take a break one afternoon and hike up a mountain called Cerro Bandera, a little over 2,000 feet in elevation. Where are we, Chris?
Right now we're looking south towards the Dientes de Navarino. We're up on top of Cerro La Bandera.
What elevation do you think?
We're probably about 700 meters or 800 meters. The tallest mountains on the island are about 1,100 meters that we're looking at right now.
Los Dientes de Navarino.
The teeth of Navarino.
Yeah, Sawtooth Mountains. And then through that gap over there, looking south, more or less south, isn't it?
Yeah, through that gap, we're looking actually past the island and into the Wollaston Islands, which are the archipelago around to the north of Cape Horn, so the Cape Horn Archipelago.
We can see the northern islands of the Cape Horn group there.
That's right.
And we're looking down at some lakes. People would call them alpine lakes, probably.
Yeah, this is all glacial lakes. Part of them are still frozen in the summer. Most of them will thaw, but some will maintain a layer of ice all summer.
And we've passed beyond the tree line quite a while ago and entered into a really interesting vegetation zone with everything was less than an inch high practically.
Yeah, here we find lots of lichens and also a lot of vascular plants that you only find in alpine zones farther north in Chile. So here they're maybe at 1,000 meters, and in northern Chile they're over 5,000 meters.
Because when do you think the trees stopped?
Here, I think tree line's about 300 meters.
300 meters. And right now the ground is all broken up like a shale.
Yeah. The freeze-thaw of the extreme climate definitely breaks up all the rocks, and you get these razor-sharp scree, shaley rocks.
Well, that's what you call scree.
Scree is sort of a cobbly, scraggly, rocky hillside that's hard to climb up, yeah.
And we've trudged through a bit of snow, some of it almost a foot deep at times.
Yeah, there are a few places on these mountains that the snow really never melts. There are no glaciers, but you definitely get some snow, permanent snowpack on top.
Do people hike around those dientes? They look awfully treacherous there, don't they?
Yeah, there's a trail that goes through them. It can be treacherous, especially this time of year. When we just did it last week, we had to scramble around some corners where the trail was actually covered completely in snow.
It's been mostly overcast, but I bet you see some gorgeous days here.
When it is bright, it's quite striking because the snow is blinding and the blue is crystalline. The air is just completely pure. The rocks stand out in stark contrast.
I'm kind of glad for the cool air today with all this heavy walking we've been doing.
It definitely keeps you a little cooler, yeah. You don't want it any hotter than this.
Wow. Feels like we're on top of the world at the bottom of the world.
That's exactly right. It feels a bit like being on Everest, I think. I mean, I've never been on Everest, but when you look around and all you can see are other mountains and everything's white, feels like you're up in the sky.
And when's the last time you saw a condor from up here?
No, this morning we saw some flying over from down in the valley.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh. So I've seen a couple around here a few days ago, but...
Yeah, once when I came up, I stepped over to the edge of this cliff, and there was one probably 20 meters out, soaring at eye level. Of course, he was 1,000 meters over the valley, but eye level with me.
Wow. Yeah, there's a valley just below us, way down there, which is forested, of course. But it's also there's also a lot of forest devastation, isn't there, from the beaver?
Yeah, being up here is like having an aerial photograph. You definitely see the beaver's impact, which is throughout the entire valley.
Wow. And there's really no way of controlling them, is there?
It would have to be a pretty intensive campaign, but given the remoteness of the region, the difficulty of the terrain, it's practically impossible without massive investment.
And then we look north to Tierra del Fuego. It still seems funny to say that. North to Tierra del Fuego, with a line of mountains, all snow-covered, above the tree line. For miles in each direction, east and west. The Beagle Channel runs east, basically east and west. But everything is snow-covered. Wherever we can see, the tops of the mountains are covered.
Yeah, today's quite calm. Sometimes you get up here and even in the middle of the summer, you can have a whiteout snowstorm and
Ooh.
hurricane force winds. If you notice also on the other side of the mountains, they're facing south, and so it's a colder side of the mountain, and tree line's actually lower on the Argentine side
Oh.
because it faces south, and so it gets less sun, whereas the Chilean side faces north, and our tree line is
Yeah.
a couple, maybe 100 meters higher.
If anybody's listening to this is wondering what we're talking about, north and south, you really have to get a map out because Tierra del Fuego is divided between Chile and Argentina. And we're south of the Argentine corner, which is the eastern corner of Tierra del Fuego. But Chile claims the islands south of the Beagle Channel, and that's where we are right now in
Yeah.
Chile. But that island right over there.
Isla Gabel, yeah, that's also part of Argentine Tierra del Fuego. And it sits out in the middle of the channel, and it's the narrowest part of the Beagle Channel. Last year, actually, some people swam across
Oh no.
to say they had swum across the Beagle Channel, but they did swim across it at its narrowest part.
It looks kind of low, and I wonder if there's ever been livestock run on that island.
Yeah, it's part of a large estancia that the Bridges family established, famous missionaries who came to the region, part of the British Anglican missionaries that came at the turn of the last century, the Harberton Ranch.
And you mentioned the name Bridges. He was an Anglican missionary here. His son was the one that learned the languages.
Yeah, the Bridges published the first Yagan dictionary,
Yeah.
which is to this point still the only one out. With that book, when the richness of the Yagan language is finally appreciated, the nuances and having one single word, for example, that meant something to the equivalent of collecting shellfish by the moonlight to give to a friend was all encompassed in one word and shows how our language evolves to reflect our native ecosystem, because obviously that was an important thing in the Austral channels.
That's incredible.
Yeah, we can actually see Chilean Tierra del Fuego from here as well. If
Can
we
you?
look to the west, you can see Ushuaia, and just on the other side of Ushuaia starts the Darwin Mountain Range yeah, Yendagaya is just on the other side of Ushuaia. The AIA at the end of a word is Yagan for bay, and so Ushuaia is bay that points to the west. Yendagaya, I think, means deep bay. Wolaya means bay of the Centolla or king crab. And if we look to the east or the west, we can see the Darwin Range, which is full of glaciers, unfortunately, most of which have been receding. And even in living memory, sailors here can tell you that the glaciers have receded into their valleys due to global warming by tens of meters, if not hundreds of meters. And when Darwin came through here on the Beagle, he describes the channel as being the equivalent of what he called the Polar Sea or the North Sea. And so there were actually icebergs floating in part of the Beagle Channel. And now you don't have any, there are very few glaciers that still calve into the ocean. Most have receded up their valleys.
Yeah.